Welcome everyone to episode 14 of the BAM Comic Podcast. It's me, Neil. It's your boy, Neil. And it's your boy, Stu. Say hello, Stu.
Hello.
There we go. It is a blistering hot day here in England, which is quite rare. So if you hear the sounds of outside coming through the open windows, well, that's just a little bonus for you. But anyway, we have got a lot to talk about today. Carly can't be here. She's off on business, which means it's a lads special. Lads. Or is it? Because we do, in fact, have an interview with Lucy James. Does she go by Lucy James or Lucy James Games?
I don't know. I think she goes by Lucy James, presenter and video game expert and comics expert, more relevantly, I guess.
A very expertile woman, yeah. As you will soon hear. So we've got a two-part interview coming up with Lucy, which you'll hear later. But there are a lot of comics to talk about, so let's get on with the show! You can add effects to that later, and it'll sound really cool.
Also, the crash into music.
All right, let's crash into music. And crash.
Great music.
I love hearing that music every time. Welcome, everyone, to episode 14. We have a lot to talk about. Where are we going to kick off, Stu?
I don't know. You said we've got a lot to talk about. We've actually, more importantly, it's quite varied. So I've got a British comic book classic.
Right.
That's been uncensored for the first time in 40 years, I'm going to say. 30, 40 years.
Can't.
And then we've got adaptation of a classic American novel.
Right.
We go full on to blockbusters with Civil War II from Marvel.
Wow, it's a varied palette.
Yeah, and we've got a movie that we swore we'd never talk about again, but we absolutely have to for very good reason. And then, well, we've got what you've got.
I was enjoying it up until then. Yeah, I've got comics as well. I've actually been reading comics this week, so that'll be cool. I suppose we may as well get this out of the way then. Let's tear off the band-aid that is Deadpool.
To be fair, we don't even use that word for about six episodes, so I think it's okay.
It's good. I thought
Beetlejuice, right? If you say it three times in a row.
That would be my nightmare if he actually did turn up. I swore that I would never watch it, but Lady Wife was not feeling too great and wanted to watch a movie.
Loves a bit of Ryan Reynolds.
She does love a bit of Ryan, the healing properties of Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Thanks to excessive Sony marketing, it was everywhere on the PlayStation store and was relatively cheap to buy. So I endured Deadpool after swearing I never would. I've lied to you, everyone. I've stabbed you all in the back. I can't say that it was worth it. What was it?
Well, if I hadn't spoken to your lady wife, you could quite easily get away with saying, oh, I didn't like it. You know, it wasn't very funny. But I have it on reliable authority that there were belly laughs and guffaws for most of the movie.
I like Ryan Reynolds and I like everything in the movie that isn't Deadpool.
But most of it is Deadpool.
He's a very good comic performer. There were some good jokes that made me laugh, and I really liked like the X-Men stuff. Yeah. That was all good.
Mm-hmm.
But just the Deadpool humour still isn't winning me over. It's just,
okay,
for some reason he's a way to wank in a blind woman's house, and just like,
we've all been there.
Any port in a storm, I know, but I'm just like, this isn't funny.
Okay. No, actually, that was probably one of the gags that kind of felt a bit tone deaf, I think. I can't remember the character's name. That whole relationship didn't, I mean, that's from the comics, and it kind of works in the comics.
Yeah.
But for me, it kind of came crashing a bit in the movie. It felt a bit fan service and didn't quite work.
There was a lot of fan service in this film. Almost a continuous blatant apology for Green Lantern and Wolverine.
Yeah, I guess. My brain's frazzled. It's too hot. I think we probably don't need to go into great detail. We've already spoken about it many, many times.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
in summary,
yeah,
this is the big question.
Right.
Marks out of five. Honestly. In spite of yourself.
Nobody ever quote me on this, but I would say it was a three. I would say it was passable. It's been better than some of the superhero movies we've endured together.
Like that an X-Men Apocalypse movie was terrible, wasn't it?
That was a five, I think, if you remember correctly.
Damn it.
That was a five. We're going to have to revisit Batman vs. Superman now. the whoop-de-doo edition's coming out.
Actually, yeah, that's kind of, I think the next BAM show we'll do will probably be a special version. It'll be the ultimate edition of BAM reviewing Batman v Superman, because that's now
available. Redux.
Yeah, yeah, now available to download digitally. So I think we'll
sit down. That.
Yeah.
Oh, crumbs. Yeah, I would say it's not the worst superhero movie I've seen in the last 2 years or
box
even
quote.
1 year. It's not the worst. They probably would use that as a box quote as well, yeah. Bastards. Yeah, I'd be in no hurry to go and see a sequel, but if a similar situation arose that was there on the telly,
you'd watch it again.
I suppose I'd watch it again.
So the next one's going to be called Deadpool and Cable.
Right.
And they haven't cast who Cable's going to be, but Ron Perlman threw his hat in the ring, and when I read that, I was like, yes!
He's got great comic timing, I'm sure they work very well together.
Yeah.
Why not?
Exactly. But who knows?
Who knows? Certainly not me, for I will be closing my man ears to all talk of Deadpool going forward.
Fair enough.
There we go, it's buried, it's done, done.
Back to the comics.
Back to the comics, right, who's going to start?
I'll let you start.
All right, I will start. I bloody will start. I have been reading many comics over the past couple of weeks, and they kind of slipped out of BAM. Just for lack of time.
Yeah.
So all of these you can currently get out in the shop. So I bought a lot of first issues, not necessarily new characters by any stretch, but they've got new series coming out. As DC reboots, Marvel's also doing a first couple of this, that, and the other. Yeah. So the first one I picked up was Jeff Lemire's take on Moon Knight. Jeff Lemire is about to become very big. As his comic Black Hammer drops today on the day of recording.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I'm very much looking forward to that.
You've been very excited about that.
I'm very excited about that. So Moon Knight, you probably know more about Moon Knight than I did. You got me into the last run.
Which was by Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey.
Yeah, Warren Ellis kicked it off. I think Moon Knight's just, he's a bizarre character, and he's gone through a tenureship of a lot of writers. Mm. He constantly seems to be getting rebooted with almost the same reboot story.
He's never quite stuck for long term. I think he's quite an interesting character, but he is instantly...
So different.
Well, he's kind of almost seen as like a budget Batman, because the whole cape and cowl.
Mm.
But the whole idea that this is a guy who's got multiple personalities, I think is really intriguing. I think it'll make a really good TV, like a Netflix show. That would be awesome, that kind of anti-hero's a bit...
Yeah.
Crackers, but I think as a comic, it's never quite captured a wider audience. And they've had some big writers on.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why he doesn't stick. But they're trying again with Jeff, who's the hot young thing.
Yeah.
He's also doing stuff like Old Man Logan and stuff like that as well. So hopefully, I mean, the first time I ever encountered Moon Knight, of all things, was in the Spider-Man Friend or Foe game. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So he cropped up in that, and I always thought he was a bit strange. But anyway. Long story short, your man Mark Spector, good civilian name, has been making a living as a mercenary. It doesn't go well. He gets all messed up and he sort of bleeds out under some Egyptian statue of, what the pronunciation of it is, Khonshu.
Yes, that's it, yeah. I always get mixed up. I always used to call it Kunlun, but that's where Iron Fist got his powers from, yeah.
So he comes back as a superhero, Moon Knight, or does he?
Mm.
It's one of these grey areas for a whiter than white.
Well, it kind of depends what personality he's got going on.
Indeed.
At the moment, so.
Indeed. So there's a lot of stuff going on in his head. So that's pretty much, again, where this one takes off. We've saw other writers take a stab at this one as well. He sort of wakes up in a mental hospital and he's trying to work out whether he is in fact crazy or is in fact Moon Knight. So old Khonshu is talking to him at night.
Yeah.
But during the day, the guards are all beating him up. But these guards take on the form of, like, other characters from his past, and the warden takes on, like, the form of his old nemesis. So you're kind of kept guessing as to whether he is or isn't. And sure enough, Jeff just keeps things escalating until the final pages, where you're like, no, even I don't know. If you had an opinion, it's completely blasted out. And I imagine that's how this run's going to take. I don't know if it will take. I don't know if it will keep going. Because we've tried to reboot Moon Knight so many times.
Yeah, I think it's one of those characters I don't think... And I like the character.
Mm.
I just don't think it will ever get that kind of mainstream, not mainstream, they'll never like get that kind of real commercial success, unless they have him appear in a movie or something to kind of get a wider audience. But I think he's always going to be C-list.
I'd love to see him crop up in like Daredevil or something like that, or just
that'd be a good fit, actually. He's a New York based hero. So.
Yeah. Seriously, give it a go. If you've enjoyed your Batman stories or stories with creeping paranoia, this is absolutely perfect for you. I really like it.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of what Jeff's doing just now, so I'm going to once again follow another reboot.
Yeah.
See, people complain about movies being rebooted all the time, yet here we are, like, oh, they're kicking off this again.
Sign me up.
So yeah, Moon Knight. You should still be able to pick up the first issue, or the second one must have just about come out. It's giving that a whirl.
Cool.
Or worst comes to the worst, you can buy up the Warren Ellis versions relatively cheap now.
Yeah, I think it only lasted like 12 issues or so.
His run,
it's pretty good. It might be less than that. I think someone else took it over writing wise. But I think Warren Ellis' run was really good.
Yeah, you enjoyed that.
Each issue was like one and done. It was kind of spooky New York stories, really.
Spooky New York. Almost each told through like a different personality as well. So that was really cool. But yeah, definitely, if you're going to take one recommendation away from me today, it's give Moon Knight a little look-see and tell us what you think.
Cool.
All right. Are we doing one for one?
Let's do one for one.
All right. Hit me. What you got for me, Uncle Stu?
Let me take you back in time, son.
Please do.
Let me take you back to Britain in the late 70s.
An age undreamed of.
An agent. Well, I was there. I mean, you weren't, were you?
No, I was a wink in the milkman's eye.
You bastard. So, 2000 AD, still going strong.
Still going.
Still going strong. The standout character for everyone internationally is going to be Judge Dredd, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, Judge Dredd, weekly comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
It started off with like sort of self-contained twist and tell stories.
Yeah.
But that's how the weekly format worked, and that's what I remember growing up reading.
Mm.
But occasionally they did these things called the mega epics, which were like longer running stories that probably last for 6 months.
I remember Rogue Trooper definitely having some of these.
Yeah, yeah.
So Judge Dredd did it as well.
Yeah, I think they probably actually kicked it off. I mean, so the first big one was called the Robot Wars, which there were wars involving robots, but the biggest one that kind of set a trend and kind of set a template for any future sort of Dredd epics was the Cursed Earth saga, which anyone who remembers the movies, even the terrible Sylvester Stallone version, that was set in the Cursed Earth, where radioactive wasteland, very much toned down for what was in the comics. The comics were like batshit crazy, so it was pretty much fodder for whatever kind of subtle parodies of culture or politics or what was going on, what they could put in this environment.
Arguably as it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Cursed Earth saga, they're off on a mission to find a cure for a plague infecting one of the other megacities.
Yeah, I vaguely remember them doing this a lot in the tabletop role-playing
game,
but that's a frightening insight into my life.
No, that's it.
Please continue.
No, it's one of the benchmark stories. I'm actually sticking to the table, I've realised.
It's that hot in England, we're sticking to the table. I'm hesitant to take my top off, but it may come to that.
It's podcast right here.
Especially as Carly's not here.
Yeah, it's nothing I've not seen before. So, Cursed Earth Saga.
Yeah.
Arguably one of the most famous storylines of Dredd. For the first time, they've just released it completely uncensored.
Right.
Because there were four very contentious episodes that were never reprinted due to some amazingly unsubtle copyright infringement.
For example,
the first two offending chapters were called The Burger Wars. It pitted Ronald McDonald against the Burger King.
Yeah.
I need to stress, this is not like a Ronald McDonald alike. Mm. And it was literally Ronald McDonald in all his glorious rendition in a big fight that Dredd and his fellow judges and weird alien companions kind of come a cropper.
Mm.
So that was your first toe-curling copyright infringement. It was great fun. It was kind of a funny story.
Hmm.
And then the next episodes further down the line were to do with Jolly Green Giant and a host of other copyright characters, including like Colonel Sanders, the Michelin Man, the Tate and Lyle Sugar Cubes, Alka-Seltzer Kid. And again, these weren't, archetype. These actually were the actual characters. And I've got, like, if you look at this, this is the cover of the Jolly Green Giant. There's a giant Jolly Green Giant picking up Dredd, drawn by Brian Bolland, who went on to do some amazing work for DC as well. So, you know, Batman the Killing Joke, which is an animated feature. So, yeah, that was Bolland's work. So, yeah, this is the first time they've actually managed to get these reprinted.
Why do you think?
I believe it's to do with changes in the parody laws in the UK. So I need to find out whether it's actually on sale in the US. I presume it is. I think the US has always been a bit more relaxed.
About parody.
Yeah. So yeah, it's already a classic storyline, and it's one of my favourite Dread epics. But it's so good to finally get it in print again. Because I did have the original issues, which were banned, and I remember it took me a while to get hold of these. They're quite rare, obviously. And for some reason, I gave them away, like it's a complete tit. I know. So it's kind of nice to get these in print again. It's actually worth picking up just solely for the half-page retraction strip that IPC Comics ran a couple of months after they did the Jolly Green Giants epic. And basically, it's a half-page strip, four panels, and it's Dread and Co. having a break at night at their campsite, eating some of the lovely Jolly Green Giant sweet corn food and talking about how the Jolly Green Giant they encountered was a wrong'un, but not like the real Jolly Green Giant.
Oh, boy.
So as they fall asleep, the real Jolly Green Giant rucks up as they're sleeping and then bequeaths some supplies from his stash.
What a stand-up guy,
and says, you know, keep up the good work, boys. If you hear anything else bad about me, I know you'll clear my name and set the record straight. And they wake up and they're like, oh, look, he's left us some stuff. What a great guy. And
Top book. And
Dredd, completely our character, is like smiling and like really chuffed. He's got his Jolly Green Giant sweet corn. So obviously they were probably hauled over the coals and had to do this. But it's quite funny. So,
but it's actually quite good.
It's great. I mean, I'm hoping they'll, this much rumoured Dredd Netflix series may get off the ground. Because this is, for me, it's like that's an entire season's worth of story they can do. I mean, and in this, apart from those episodes, you've got some great stuff like you really get to see some of these crazy mutants, which, you know, they've taken over Mount Rushmore and kind of...
They're all mutant faces in there.
Yeah, and it's kind of... I'm a massive fan of Brian Bolland's artwork, and this is some of his earliest stuff, and it's kind of great to see his stuff there. And you've got... You said you played the role-playing games. There's loads of stuff that was kind of taken from that. You've got, like, a whole vampire storyline where it's like a robot draining blood from innocent victims. And it turns out what he's doing, he's actually... taking it back to like a secret bunker where the last president of the United States is like gone into like hibernation. They basically need the blood to keep him alive. So basically they kind of take him out because all the villagers think it's like a vampire. It's actually the last president of the United States.
Nice.
And he gets put on trial really because it's his fault that the nukes dropped. So there you go, he's the last president of the United States.
Wow.
Then you've got dinosaurs. You've got Satanus, the giant T-Rex. There's a whole storyline of that where he's worshipped by another bunch of crazy villagers. You know, it's a kind of like a Western epic.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's just like mind-blowing, all this stuff. And that's something that 2000 AD in general did really, really well, where it was just like crazy concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's good to see his epic back in print as the way it should be. So it's available as a hardcover now. It's pretty much sold out. I think in the first week, the first printing sold out straight away. So I think they're going to do a soft cover as well.
Okay. But worth looking out for. Definitely worth tracking down.
Definitely worth doing.
Bit of history.
Yeah.
All right. Shall I roll on?
Roll on and drop that. Ready?
Ready. Here we go.
That's it.
We have to tighten up the edit on that one. All right. Up next, Lady Mechanica. Which caught my eye. I picked this up on Free Comic Book Day.
Lady Mechanica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll definitely have saw it, but never picked it up.
All right.
So Lady Mechanica is essentially the comic book I would have written as a teenager. Just reading it.
Do you want to go here?
Yeah. Just reading it, I was like, I've had all of these ideas, and this is exactly a million comics that I've started and never finished. So it's written by Joe Benitez, who you'd know from, if you ever read stuff like The Darkness.
Yes.
That was later made into two video games.
Very good video games.
Very good video games. You'd instantly recognise him. He's got a very distinct art style. I don't want to diminish him when I say it's straight out of the edgy 90s.
Yeah.
But you would know it as soon as you see it. Okay. So this is part of, he's created it, he owns it, publishes it. So, you know, support your local artists and whatnot.
Cool.
But he's in America, which comes into play because basically Lady Mechanica is a sort of turn-of-the-century Victorian woman living in old Victorian steampunk London.
As envisioned by an American.
As envisioned by an American. So some of the dialogue is very like, pip, pip, chim-chiroo, I say, Lady Mechanica.
Cor blimey, governor.
Yeah, a lot of cor blimeys. Yeah. A lot of cor blimeys. So literally like every protagonist I ever wrote about. She's part human, but she can't remember how, but somehow she's woken up with robot limbs and robot parts inside of her. So she's now tough as fuck. So I can't remember why, but I'm partly a robot.
It's gin, love. It's like you've been on a gin.
Yeah. So she sometimes has terrible flashbacks about that. But yeah, so like any turn of the century hero, she becomes a private detective to help out others.
Yep. Shades of Sherlock Holmes then.
Very much definite shades of Sherlock Holmes, but she is both the brawn and the brain.
Yeah.
And she's accompanied by her helper, Mr. Lewis, who wants to help her find out what's going on. But yeah, like, it typically she'll round the corner of a street and there'll be a gang of thugs going, right, oh, you wandered down the wrong street, cor blimey, chim-chim-chiroo. Yeah.
Oh, Mary Poppins. Oh, no, wrong.
Right. Oh, you will regret it. She doesn't talk like that. But she's like, oh, you will regret it, gentlemen. I'm a lady. And they're like, oh, we're going to beat you up anyway. And then she'll proceed to, like, robot punch them in the face. To which Mr. Lewis will be like, cor blimey. I could have told you that. She's a robot. Everyone knows.
Is it quite violent? Is it that kind of 90s style where it's like mass gibbage and like dislocated jaws?
It's not super graphic, but it chills very well. It almost reminds me of good Doctor Who. Like this episode of the story it features like missing street urchins that are being kidnapped. And they're wired up to like a machine that will sort of drain their essence and put them into like little creepy looking robot toy bears.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that's quite dark.
Like you say, it's kind of like dark Doctor Who rather than camp and silly Doctor Who.
Yeah, back in the 90s, Doctor Who used to be quite good.
Yeah.
As opposed to what it is now.
80s, you mean?
Yeah, 80s into 90s, I've dated myself again. So it is quite unnerving. But yeah, Giovanni's and sometimes other writers take over, but it's normally him doing the art. Has been running now. There's a couple of series of it and some collected works.
Yeah.
But the latest Mechanica was put out on Free Comic Book Day, so there's still plenty of copies of issue one. It's worth it.
I'll have to tap that up, actually.
You should do. You should do. If you're missing the sort of days of Witchblade and the darkness from the 90s, funnily enough, it slots in very well.
Okay.
And just, it literally is everything I envisaged of writing a comic when I was a teen, but was too lazy to do. So it's a real guilty pleasure, but I think I'm definitely going to follow it through to the end of the series and see where it goes. So, yeah, pick that one up if you dare, listener. Yeah, two recommendations in one bloody podcast. Stick that in your Victorian steampunk pipe.
And smoke it.
And smoke it, and fog will come out.
It's a long quote. I don't think we can use that on the air.
Box quote. Well, if you're listening, Joe, you can have that one for free.
Awesome.
Right. What's next, Unky Stu?
Well, I think we should have a break and we should go over and listen to my interview with Lucy James about her love of comic books. Like I said, we split into two because she had a lot to talk about. She knows her stuff.
Let's hear what Lucy James has to say.
Hi, I'm Lucy James. I am a video producer at GameSpot.com, but I've been a comic book fan for a very long time now. It's kind of my other hobby.
Cool. I can definitely say not as long as me. When was the first time you started reading? Do you know roughly what year?
Like proper comics or like kid comics?
That's a good question. I guess, I don't know, I guess kid comics. That's how it all started.
So I had the Beano for years. I don't even know why I started reading it. I think I just picked it up in a shop one day and my dad's quite nerdy.
Right.
But he's not on the surface nerdy. You have to really get to know him, and then he'll be like, oh, right, okay, well, I've got the new Worms game or Tomb Raider. So he was very, like, immediately got me a year-long subscription to the Beano.
That's cool.
So he's immediately like, let's see where this goes. And then I guess as I got older and, you meet friends and who have different interests to you, and you gradually sort of get introduced to that kind of thing. And I think that's what happened. I mean, I grew up in Newcastle, And we have a very big, a very good Forbidden Planet, but we also have a Travelling Man. And their birthday, the Travelling Man shop, they opened on the exact day in the exact year I was born. So every year, me and my friend Aaron would always go on my birthday to Travelling Man because they always had a sale on. And it was like our little thing that we did every year. And also you'd get cake, which is also a really big, really big bonus.
Have you told them that you share a birthday?
Yeah. I think one year I did it and they gave me even more money off. And I was like, yeah, did you know that we in the shop, we've got a bit of history?
Did you have to show ID? Because like, surely anyone can go in and say that.
I think I did, you know, right. I think just to prove it. I was like, yeah, here's my ID and everything.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, okay, so Bina, that's a good start. That's kind of like very British. So
yes, Dundee, right?
Yeah, that's cool. So what was your favourite stories in the Beano? Is it the obvious ones, like Dennis the Menace?
No, you know what? I really like Gnasher and Nipper.
Yeah.
I think they had their own spin-off for a while. I really liked Ivy the Terrible, Minnie the Minx, and the Bash Street Kids. It's like very British humour. Also, Calamity James, which unfortunately is sort of like my new nickname in the office. I just sort of really enjoyed them. And although when they would try out new artists and things, I remember as a kid being like, oh, I'm not sure about this. You know what I mean? I had a very...
You were quite aware of that then. How old were you then? Yeah, were you still very young?
Yeah, I would have been under 10.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, I'm not sure about this. I preferred the old way. But I read them for years, and I think I stopped at about, when I was about 10, I think. And then I think I left comics for a few years, and then it was weird because it's sort of like how I went with gaming as well, and that I played a lot when I was a kid, took a few years off, and then came back in full force when I was in my mid-teens.
Right, okay.
And with that, I think it was Watchmen, which was the first thing I properly got really stuck into.
That's a hell of a level up. What got you into that? Was it sort of a recommendation?
I think it was a recommendation from someone at school. It must have been. I had a friend called David, and he recommended me like Resident Evil 4. So basically, I was like, okay. Right, you've got good taste.
Yeah.
I'll read this. And I just remember falling absolutely in love with it and I'm one of those people who actually enjoyed the movie just because I feel like it was a really great adaptation of what was on the page. Just the way that Zack Snyder managed to put it on the screen. I mean, we'll not talk about Batman versus Superman because that was the complete opposite direction, but just the way that it sort of like just flowed and translated so well, and it felt like if you hadn't read the comic, you may be a bit lost, because in that regard, it was a bit too faithful.
When I saw it in the cinema, I totally agree with you, actually. And I remember coming out and loving the movie, but I didn't know whether it was because it was so faithful to the comic, and I still can't work out whether it was actually a good movie in its own right, or whether it was just... I just loved the story so much that I kind of...
I feel like any gaps it would have had, my brain would have automatically filled in. So in my head, regardless, I would have had the full story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I totally with you on that one. I mean, even the them dumping the sort of alien,
the vagina beginning. Monster.
Yeah,
come on, let's just say what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So with losing the vagina monster, I was okay with, because I think. It made sense within the movie, because from what I remember in the movie, they didn't have all the supporting characters like the scientists who were working on it as the kind of subplot.
No.
They had to dump that, so I guess it kind of, I think if you did just do a giant vagina monster without any of that kind of background, it would have been what the fuck. So
I haven't seen the full director's cut, but I know that they put Tales from the Black Freighter back in, and it's an animation, but it's got Jared Butler, I think, narrating it.
I was trying to think what the guy's name was, but yeah, that's him.
But I don't know. I assume they would have just kept Dr. Manhattan as the antagonist rather than old blue vagina.
Yeah, monster. They kept that. They didn't sort of alter that. So yeah, we did touch on Batman v Superman. So in the last part of the last podcast we did, I did speak to Neil about the Ultimate Edition, where people who had slated Batman v Superman, me included, had watched the Ultimate Edition and apparently felt it was actually a good movie. So have you seen it? Have you any desire to see it?
You know, I sort of do, because I'm also reading, they sent a bunch of people to the set of Justice League recently, and among them was a guy, I can't remember who he wrote for, but he wrote this really long detailed article about how much he hated Batman versus Superman.
Right.
And they specifically sent him because they were like, okay, this is how we're going to fix the Justice League. And man, they converted him. And so now I feel like I have to watch the Ultimate Edition just so I can give the Justice League, just give it another chance. But yeah. I thought that movie was...
What were your issues with it then? Was it just because it was... I mean, I know we discussed it. Neil was a fan of it, basically.
Neil really liked it.
He did. But for me, it was all choppy. There were bits missing, which apparently have been restored.
Yeah, I mean, it was just bits missing tonally. It was really weird. You could tell that it was trying to do the Marvel thing, but doing it really badly. Like, when they... Oh, like, Batman having Wonder Woman's email address, and then, like, oh, and then, what is it? Just let's find the secret files on Lex's computer about the Justice League. And they've all got really specific .mavs of them just using their powers. It just felt so clunky. And then at the end, I thought that action sequence was brilliant, and I was like, yeah, this is great, okay, but this was not worth me sitting here for 2 hours. And then especially at the end where Jesse Eisenberg was just like, just bizarre. You know, like Heath Ledger as the Joker, he nailed that role so well, and you knew that he was unhinged, and you knew that he was a dangerous man. I just felt that Jesse Eisenberg, I don't mean to slay his performance, I think he did the best with what he had, but he just sort of, he switched it on, like, about a third of the way in, and it was just very bizarre, and I just, oh yeah, I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy Ben Affleck as Batman, though. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, love that. I mean, yeah, with Jesse Eisenberg, I haven't got a problem with him. I just think the characterisation of how they presented Lex Luthor just was off. I think it was just kind of sub Jim Carrey.
He seemed to be playing Zuckerberg again.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a bit, yeah, one note. But anyway.
So anyway, let's go back to Watchmen. So that was your reintroduction back into comics. So what was, we're talking like 13, 14, I guess? Or?
Maybe about 14, 15, right, I think. Okay. Yeah. And then from there, that would have been around the time that Christopher Nolan was doing Batman. And I think that's when I started buying Batman. My thing about comics is I will always delve into sort of what's deemed, you know, like you have to read.
Yeah.
I said play because in my head I was thinking of Arkham Asylum. Yeah. And I always kind of dip into what I know is going to be good. So like The Dark Knight Returns, Arkham Asylum, The Killing Joke, that kind of thing with the arcs that I definitely remember picking up. I've just moved, so it's in a box somewhere. They're all safely together in a box. But I just remember picking those up and loving sort of the dark tone of it.
Yeah.
I just remember, especially Arkham Asylum, because some of that is just so grim. Like when they, was it Mad Dog who... He rapes and murders Arkham's wife, and his daughter's head's found in the dollhouse or something, and it's just so grim. And I make no secret of it. I love sort of true crime, like tales of serial killers, and so that kind of just really, I enjoyed that a lot because it was the dark, macabre kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, it did ruffle a few feathers because I remember, you know, showing my age, I think it was my last year at school when that came out, and it was around about the time that the first Tim Burton Batman movie came out. So basically, as far as the public were concerned, Batman was still camp 60s Adam West, so you've got this dark movie, which actually, in hindsight, isn't as dark now when you look at it currently.
Yeah, it's not, is it? I haven't watched him back in a while, but...
Yeah, it's surprising.
Batman Returns. Yeah. As incredible as... what's her name? Catwoman.
Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yeah, it's incredible she wasn't that role. It is incredibly camp, sort of, when you watch him.
Yeah.
It's very over the top, very... bit Amdram, but in, like, a good way.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You've got Christopher Walken in it.
Man, I need to watch that back.
There you go. Required viewing after this. So you're into the Batman, your Batman phase.
Yes.
So I'm kind of waiting for you to drop the X bombshell, because I'm kind of surprised you haven't mentioned it yet.
And then I remember it was around the time when I started university, just before I went to university, actually, I kind of went through another big phase, and that's when I started reading The Walking Dead, but it's also when I picked up the Dark Phoenix saga for the first time. I sort of fell in love with Jean. Just Jean. I love Jean. I think I love the Dark Phoenix more than I love Jean. But I just... There's something about that book that I love, and I've read it multiple times. And... It makes it all the sadder for me that X-Men 3 had to happen.
I guess you'd read the graphic novel before that came out then?
You know, I think I'd seen the movie first, but I didn't really appreciate that's... You know what, I think I saw the movie and then I read the comic book, and then at the end I was like, oh my god, was that what they were trying to do? Like, I can't even remember what she gets up to. Oh, it's just, she's under Magneto's thrall or something.
Yeah.
Which is nothing compared to, the free will and the insatiable hunger of the Dark Phoenix. What does she do? She eats a sun and kills, 9 billion people and just doesn't care about it.
Just for shits and giggles.
Just for shits and gigs. And she's, the bit when she's under the... when she's in the Hellfire Club and she comes out and she's dressed like, it's the complete opposite of what we know as Jean. She's dressed in like this black, what do you call that? Corset. And she's got a cape.
Yeah.
She's got a badass cape. I just really loved the way that, and as well, the X-Men were trying to figure out how to get her back. And, you have the confrontation with the, what are they called?
What, the Imperial Guard?
Yes, the Imperial Guard. So you have that awesome big fight at the end, and then, Jean struggling to come back, and I love that book. I also love Days of Future Past, which as well is when you watch Days of Future Past, you're like, oh, God.
So you're not a fan of the movie then? I thought it was quite good.
I didn't like it. I mean, with the X-Men movies, I still haven't seen Apocalypse just because I heard.
It's divisive. I mean, I remember saying to you that it was absolutely awful and terrible and you'd be disappointed. But then Neil swears blind it's the best superhero movie this year. He thinks it's better than Civil War. And I've heard a lot of people say that. So I don't know. I think it is going to be a Marmite. So you might see it and love it.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the... I'm not sure if it's out on DVD yet, but I was. It's going to be one of those I'm going to watch at home, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of the X-Men movies, I thought X-Men 2 was great. And
still the best, I think.
Still the best. And First Class as well was great, even if they sort of mess up the time frame a little bit. But when I watched Days of Future Past, I just thought, oh, right, okay, so it's... I don't know, it just felt really weird. And it just didn't feel as cohesive, and it just felt like they're trying to shoehorn in... what they see as the main characters instead of, who's actually a part of that story. I don't like the way that they've... it seems like the more popular that Jennifer Lawrence has got, the more that they'll shoehorn her into X-Men, which is basically why I didn't go and see Apocalypse. It was my main reason, is because I didn't feel like I was interested in seeing, 2 hours of kissing Jennifer Lawrence's ass kind of thing.
She's definitely a more of a main focus than perhaps...
Yeah, and I don't even think she's that good as a Mystique, because I thought Rebecca Romijn was brilliant because she had the the deep voice and the sultry sort of behaviour, but she was a complete badass. Whereas Jennifer Lawrence, I don't mean to completely slay or anything. I like Jennifer Lawrence, but it's difficult for me to see past her now. You know what I mean?
Mm, no, I get that. I get that. I always, it's because obviously they've altered the timeline as well of the movies. I think even though they share the same name, I just kind of see them as two totally different characters, like the Romaine Mystique and the Lawrence Mystique. But no, I think you're right. I think it's a case of I think they've made Lawrence's Mystique more of a bigger character because purely because she's, you know, box office bank.
Yeah. And also, I don't know, like, I know that one of the big central running themes of X-Men is the, you know, Charles versus Magneto, but I'm just sort of Charles v. Eric, but I'm sort of tiring of that now.
Oh, God, yeah. Don't yeah. Have to see Apocalypse then.
Oh, damn it.
Damn him. Okay, so you got into your X-Men phase, so...
Yeah.
So did you read much more sort of X-Men stuff? You said, like, Days of Future Past as well.
Was it Astonishing X-Men? Was that Joss Whedon's one?
Yeah, that was his one.
Yeah, I read a few of that. But I remember I just enjoyed Claremont mostly. So he was the writer that I read the most of. And then I think that phase sort of ended, and I sort of went into picking and choosing sort of different comics, really. Like, I had a big Walking Dead phase. And then I got to issue 100, and I just stopped.
Can I ask you why? Because that's interesting you've said that. Can I?
So, around issue 100, I remember tiring of it a little bit, because the story is incredibly cyclical, especially in the comic. I'm not sure how they're dealing with it in the TV. Well, the TV show was at a much slower pace.
Mm.
But in the comic, it was, you know, find settlement. Settlement is overrun with Walking Dead. They'll find a settlement that's run by a seemingly nice guy who's obviously evil. And then they'll try and become integrated into the new society. Something will happen. They'll get inundated by Walking Dead. They'll kill the evil guy. And then they'll take over the town or take however many survivors with them. Realize they can't stay there. Rick will say, "We are the Walking Dead," and then they'll go off on a journey and try and find another settlement when the exact same thing will happen.
Good recap.
But that's basically Walking Dead, right?
Pretty and
I
much.
Like, but I really, I thought the first 60 or 70 were really great. Like, when you're in the prison and when you've got Michonne and you have, like, that whole stuff, I really, really enjoyed. And then they left the prison. And then I think it was when they started the stuff with Negan, and I sort of was like, oh, okay, we'll see where this goes. And then in issue 100, they kill off my favourite character, and I just thought, I don't have the energy for this anymore.
So how, because I, actually 100 was my last issue, and pretty much what you're saying, but I think this is weird, considering how violent the comic is and the nature of it.
Yeah.
It's Glenn's death.
Yeah.
Was a line for me, because I just remember it being, well, I remember feeling that it was really gratuitous when you're literally, yeah, spoilers,
yeah.
For everyone listening, when they literally, yeah, you see graphically his brains being bashed out by Negan with a baseball bat, and I just thought, this is just, you know.
Yeah, Maggie's watching, right? Yeah. Is she pregnant at that point?
I can't remember, but all I remember is, like, you know, Glenn kind of, you know, mumbling, because he can't speak, probably obviously his brains have been dashed.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know what, I'm done. And I remember just, I wasn't even reading it physically. I was doing Comixology. I remember just cancelling the subscription and not gone back. But yeah. I am watching the show. I kind of went back, and they just introduced Negan now. And
is he Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
Yeah, so he,
I like him.
He's good. I mean, you know, he's only. It is quite chilling the season finale, because I think he has like 5 minutes probably of screen time, like the last scene, maybe 10 minutes, and he's brilliant. I couldn't tell you whether he's a good Negan or not, because I never bothered reading afterwards. But he seems an interesting enough. But yeah, with the comic, I gave up. So there you go. We'll we'll come back with the second part next. Well, maybe next episode. I think next episode we're going to do our Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition.
Ooh, don't tie yourself down there. Let's hope so. But yeah, thank you for your time, Lucy. That's much appreciated.
And we shall pick up with you next time.
Yes. Right.
Back to comics.
Yeah.
So I'm going to channel my best Axl Rose.
Oh, dear.
I don't want your civil war!
It was as if
Axl was in the room.
It's uncanny.
So yeah, Civil War 2.
It's kicked off, has it?
We're three issues in.
God, is it three already?
Well, yeah, but if you include the free comic book day edition and issue zero, we're five episodes in.
Right.
But the episode zero and the free comic book day and issue one kind of covered over the same ground from different angles.
Yeah.
But it's the hook this time around.
Right.
Is that there's been an Inhuman discovered. Okay. Called Ulysses, who has the ability to predict the future.
Oh.
And the split comes between Tony Stark again.
Oh, Tony.
But this time it's with Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Right.
Over whether we should use this guy or we should not. We should let the future happen the way it's going to happen.
Which is comic booky, but fair enough. I like this is as good a twist as the Registration Act. Got time for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't think it's as strong. I think the Registration Act was kind of that to me when that when they had that angle. I thought that's really cool.
Yes.
You could kind of equate it to real world.
Yes.
You know, in the real world, if there were superheroes, this that actually would happen. The government, governments of the world would clamp down.
I'm still laughing at your Axel impression.
Sorry. It was terrible. It was really, really terrible. So. Where we're at, the inciting incident this time around is Ulysses predicts, he has a vision and predicts that Thanos is going to come to Earth and going to basically kick some ass and someone's going to die, which comes true. So what they've done, they've actually killed off James Rhodes' War Machine.
Oh, sorry, Rhodesy.
And it's left She-Hulk in a coma as well, so she's on the cusp. She could die.
She could die.
I don't think she will. I think the way that the story's gone recently.
Right.
When I heard about this, I was like, instantly... I felt they're killing off a black character, and I was kind of a bit uncomfortable because there are not enough prominent, African American superheroes. And with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, War Machine is quite a big deal. But then it does kind of make sense from a story narrative point of view because in the comics, apart from being Tony Stark's best mate, Jim Rhodes is also like the lover of Carol Danvers. So
yeah.
Yeah, if his death, it kind of makes sense as far as these two people have got vested interests for having their drive. You know, one wants to use this Ulysses character, and the other one wants to kind of just let things happen as they are. Let the chips fall where they may.
And they've come to blows over it then.
Come to blows over it. So we're only a few episodes in issue three. If you listen this far, again, there's obviously going to be spoilers.
Yeah.
It does take a very surprisingly dark turn where Ulysses' latest vision sees the Hulk on a rampage.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not up to date with Marvel Comics, Bruce Banner hasn't been the Hulk in continuity for about a year, I think, in the story world. I think he's not Hulked out since.
Yeah.
And appears not to be able to Hulk out. He's lost his ability and he's ended up being taken over by Amadeus Cho, who's a kind of like a young teen...
That rings a bell.
Yeah, he's been around, knocking around the comics for a while, and he's kind of taken up the mantle of the Hulk. And it's actually called the Totally Awesome Hulk, his series, where he's kind of enjoying being the Hulk. It's kind of, he's having fun with it.
Right.
So it's a slightly different take on it.
Yeah.
So he is the current Marvel Universe Hulk. But nonetheless, this vision that Ulysses has had is of the Hulk on a rampage killing like some of the Marvel heroes. So they track down Bruce Banner and they confront him. And he's like, look, I'm not the Hulk anymore. It's not going to happen. I'm totally fine. It's totally fine. He gets angry.
Right. As you would.
As you would.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of the blue, or out of the trees, comes an arrow straight through his brain. Kills him dead.
He uses arrows.
Yeah. So Hawkeye basically kills him. And there's going to be a big trial, basically, where he's put on trial.
Hawkeye
now, he claims that Banner came to him before and said, look, if I... become the Hulk again. If there's any danger of that, I want you to kill me.
Right.
And he claims that he saw Banner's eyes go green, which no one else saw, you see. So,
but he's got Hawk eyes.
Yeah, so that's it. So Banner is dead, which of course he's not. He'll be back in about 5 years' time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's not as good as the first Civil War. I kind of think it's kind of struggling to kind of maintain it. And I think it's got some great artwork in it. But I think Brian Michael Bendis' stuff I do like. He does have a tendency to over-talk.
Yeah.
There's always like some snappy dialogue and it kind of, this kind of extended stuff. It could be nice to kind of condense it down. Like we've had five issues, which could easily be condensed into one or two issues, I think.
Yeah.
We're not even halfway through yet, so who knows where it's going to twist and turn. The promises are that at the end of this, you know, the Marvel Universe will
be never complete. Be the same again.
Until next time.
Until the next one.
But there will be splits. I think there'll be characters be split down the middle. And it's going to be fun to see what the interesting dynamics of what happens after that. I mean, out of this, we know that we're going to have some new Iron Men characters. We've got Riri Williams confirmed as being
very excited
an Iron Woman. And they've also confirmed that Victor Von Doom, who has been scuttling around the background of the Iron Man comics as a reformed character, is going to become the infamous Iron Man. So he gets hold of, either he gets hold of Stark Tech or he creates his own. He's a genius. So
he's a genius.
And yeah, we're going to get a new Avengers lineup off the back of this as well. There could well be more fatalities as far as sort of major heroes go. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, if you're a Marvel head like me, you're going to read it and you're going to want to check out and you want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's okay. I just think it's not as strong as the original Civil War by any country mark.
Do you, at this point, think Ulysses will turn out to be bullshit?
No, I think they're actually talking about giving him his own series as well. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, but I don't know. There you go. That's Civil War 2.
All right.
And I'll spare you another Axl Rose impression.
I don't know. It was kind of growing on me now. All right. Yep. So, shall I take us to the next one?
Please do.
All right, Stu. Guess who's back? Back again.
I want to say Backstreet Boys, but it's not. I've already cheated. I've looked at your notes.
Oh, so you'll know that Frank is back.
Yeah.
So, a couple of you might have heard of the character The Punisher.
Very low key.
Very low key. He was kind of floundering for a while, actually, in comic book land. The last big event he had, really, was being turned into Frankencastle. So we did have, like, the amazing Garth Ennis, like, Marvel Max, like, Punisher run.
That was, like, got to be, like, 15 years ago now, right?
Yeah. It was probably, like, the last one. 15 don't make me feel old. 10. Yeah, give me 15. 10. Give me 10.
I'm gonna use the wonders of the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
But Frank's really not been up to much, but he's had a bit of a resurgence recently with Daredevil. So, much like every other character that we've talked about, or I've talked about, he's getting a kickoff in a new series. So, The Punisher number one is out, written by Becky Cloonan, who's done loads of stuff, probably most famous for kickstarting the Gotham Academy series.
Yeah.
So, she's a hot young thing. As is Jeff Lemire. So we're talking about all the hot talent.
Like us.
We're hot and young. And she is joined by longtime Punisher artist Steve Dillon. So it's good marriage.
Mm.
Good marriage in comic book land.
And it was 15 years ago, by the way.
Was it 15? Yeah.
No, actually, no, it was 16. It was 2000 it came out.
Oh, Christ.
Yep.
Anyway, that is both a gift and a curse to The Punisher, because we don't really have the Max series up and running. It's still out there, but nothing particularly recent. They're just sort of letting all the old storylines come to an end. So we've got a new series of Punisher kicking off, which is trying to fill the role of like what you had in Daredevil, and trying to fill the role of what you had in the Max series, and trying to meet somewhere in the middle. So yeah, wouldn't you know it, Frank Castle, the Punisher, overhears some drug deals going down and goes to sort it all out through a mixture of a charismatic bad guy henchman. Basically, most of the episode is just a big fight through a drugs warehouse.
Yeah.
And where it reveals, I think it's a new villain we've got here.
Yeah, you lent me the first issue. I read the first one.
He's got a habit of just taking people's faces and laughing about it. Which, you know, everyone needs a hobby.
Well, I think that works with The Punisher. I think you need to have... do you know what? It kind of links back to what Judge Dredd talked about earlier. Because I think Dredd and Punisher are very similar. They're basically fascists.
Yeah.
On their own, they tend to be stereotypical couple cut-out characters, because by their very nature, they're not that deep.
Yeah.
What makes them interesting is the world around them and the characters around them.
Mm.
Because I think with The Punisher, there's not really much you can do, because he is a psychopath.
Yeah.
You know, it's you can't have him mellowing and going, you know what? I don't need to do this anymore, because that's the end of the series. He always has to be this kind of single-minded, driven...
There's no off-switch.
Yeah, so I think you have to have outlandish villains and... A great supporting cast, and that's what Garth Ennis did really well with Welcome Back Frank.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And I think I got the impression from the first issue of this, they're trying to do something similar, right? They're kind of trying to give you some new characters. You've got like is it the FBI investigators? They're trying to introduce those characters.
Yeah. A lot of that. And you've got like the typical, remember me from our army days, Frank. You know that I could beat you. To which Frank doesn't even question it because he's like, yeah, you could beat me. So I'm not even trying.
Yeah.
Which gives a nice little standoff, which is good, which is cool, which helps it all grow. I'll take some of that. I don't think this first issue was enough for me to go back and maybe stick with this whole series. Yeah. Like I'll thumb through the next one.
I think on that one issue, it's such a tough thing to do something with a character like Frank Castle. For kind of what I said a minute ago, really, it's just, you know, he's on his own. He's not that much of an interesting character. And it's, if you can introduce new characters, one issue's not enough, I don't think, to kind of make you think, oh, wow, it's amazing. You know?
Yeah. So, I think part of my problem here is I've been with that Punisher since the Max run.
Yeah.
And I think, as we say there, 2000. I don't think I started reading it till 2006, but that's almost a decade. So maybe I'm too burned out on the Punisher to give this one a reboot. I don't need one.
What are you gonna do? You know, just wait for the collected edition, you think? Or are you gonna go
no,
back?
I'm gonna make a point of seeking out issue two because I've got a lot of faith in Becky Cloonan.
She's a good writer. Yeah.
She's a great writer, but I think I'm just being too old and jaded in this respect.
Yeah.
So I can't overtly recommend it, but I will check back in the BAM comic podcast when I've picked up episode two and see if I've got anything more conclusive.
Cool.
All right.
Excellent.
Man, that takes us to the final comic in today's episode.
When I did my US trip last month, one of the shops in Baltimore I stopped off at, this was actually Gorilla King Comics.
Uh-huh.
And...
oh, yeah, we talked about
Gorilla King. So I saw the cover for this and I was like, oh my God, they've done a comic of this book.
Right.
Which is one of my all-time favourite books.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of my favourite movies, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by Hunter S. Thompson.
He's dead. How can he have written a comic?
No, what are the odds? So this is an adaptation by Troy Little. I'd say he's written it, but technically it's stuff from the book, right? So but he's illustrated it. And he's kind of, instantly from the cover, you can tell he's taken the famous Ralph Steadman illustrations.
Oh, yeah.
But taking his own spin on it.
Hmm.
So it's an amazingly bonkers cover.
Yeah.
With our beloved Gonzo journalist. And the artwork itself is black and white. This is part one. I think it's going to be about, probably going by how far they've got into this, it's probably about three or four parts it's going to be.
I bet you they're going to have a sequence where he goes colour.
I hope so. I mean, I was disappointed it was black and white, but then I thought, well, the Ralph Steadman illustrations are black and white, so maybe that's, that kind of makes sense. But no, you would have thought they would have gone colour for the lobby sequence where he's checking into the hotel.
Yeah.
And the carpet kind of swallows him up. And everyone looks like a reptile. But no, it's fun. I mean, I've been wanting to reread the book again for a long time.
Mm.
So this kind of came across at the right time. Because it was nice to read it, but have a different experience with it.
So I was only ever able to take it a chapter at a time, and I did enjoy it. But how does it hold up in comic form? How digestible is it?
It's crazy. I mean, it's pretty much as accurate as you could expect of a comic book adaptation. And it's nice doing it in bite-sized chunks. I mean, it's quite a few pages of this. It's looking at about 40-odd pages for the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would highly recommend this if you're a fan. It's not cheap. It's like $5. But
you're getting a lot of comic for your buck.
And, you know, for me, it's nice to have a different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, it'll be collected in a graphic novel edition, so if you want to wait till then, by all means. But yeah, really good job by Troy Little there, and it's one of those things where you just think, why hasn't someone done this before?
Yeah.
It's great. I love it. So, highly recommended.
Yeah, but Luce, I don't know, are those alternate covers, or are they going to be
there's some alternate ones there as well.
All right. Does look good. The art does look incredible. I'll say that for it, definitely.
Kind of curious whether you want to do an adaptation of Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, which was his notes during like Nixon's run for the presidency, purely because I couldn't get to the end of the book. It's quite heavy going.
Yeah.
And at the time when I read it about 20 years ago, my knowledge of American politics wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Troy, if this does well, can you just do a comic book adaptation on that, please?
You can bring it to a wider audience. Yeah. Why not?
So you have it.
There you have it. That was a jam-packed
episode
of BAM.
So I'm sure there's something else I want to talk about, Quinn, but I can't remember what it was now.
Can't have been that important. Maybe Carly knew, but probably. Carly can't be with us. No. So thank you very much for listening to another Boy Fest. Well, apart from Lucy. Sorry, Lucy's not boy. But yeah.
Honorary boy.
Honorary boy. Honorary band boy. Oh, that could be a thing. We could start a club. Band boy club.
That sounds dodgy.
No, well, maybe not. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's Neil Gort. Stu, where can they find you?
You can find me under Stu Narmi.
And you can follow all of us under BAM Comic Cast up on the Twitters. And we also have a little Facebook page as well if you want to go
and look. Yeah, got loads of followers on there. We're knocking on 500 now, I think.
So. Yeah, go us. Obviously, you're listening to us, so you know where to download us, but we're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not even going to start listing where we are, but we are everywhere.
We're everywhere, like a big comic rash.
Exactly. And again, we always ask this, but yeah, please give us a review, like, and subscribe.
Yeah.
It all helps.
It helps us shoot up those charts and become the kings of the comics, like we totes are.
Indeed.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another BAM Comic Cast, but until then,
bye!
It's a bit high-pitched, I don't know why I went high.
Was that your Axl Rose?
Oh, and then it'll be like, bye, 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 bye.
Awesome.